Much of the content of this segment is based on the work of the Swiss theologian Balthasar. There has been a resurgence of interest in Trinitarian theology in evangelical scholarship over the last few years. But this has not so much been to revisit or revise the historic formulations and creeds, but rather to work out the implications of Trinitarian theology as it applies to ministry, church life, and our mission into the world. I've personally found this very helpful and believe it can provide some useful tools for those of us in ministry. Balthasar was one of the forerunners in re-emphasizing the theological importance of beauty and referencing it to the Trinity. He wrote 7 volumes on the subject, which are published under the title The Glory of the Lord. Much of this segment is comprised of direct quotes from his work. However, his writing style is very compact, and many of the quotes reflect this. It requires some effort and concentration, but he really is a gold mine. If you're listening in the car, you may have to pull over a few times and hit rewind, but he really is worth it. I also include a smattering of other authors who have interpreted his work or written on the subject. But unless I say otherwise, all the quotes are from Balthasar. John Stackhouse says, quote, "The very idea of beauty makes many cringe nowadays. It seems utterly out of touch with postmodern thinking, since the notion of beauty implies absolute standards, which of course our society has now abandoned. Yet despite the difficulty of defining beauty, the concept nevertheless is making a comeback," unquote. And it's rather ironic that while the concept of beauty is being denied in the humanities, it's being embraced by physicists and mathematicians who often describe their theories as elegant, beautiful, and even breathtaking. The purpose of this segment is to present an overview of how Balthasar and others are taking advantage of this comeback in the importance of beauty to advance the kingdom of God. Plato said that beauty gives the heart wings. And as believers, we know that the Trinity is the fountainhead of all that's beautiful. Eternal beauty, which Balthasar equates with glory, resides within the Godhead. The beauty that we see in creation is simply an epiphany of that which is an attribute of the Trinity. Quote, "The world gains its beauty from above, from divine love, which for its part, through the reflection of the Trinitarian persons, is the archetype of all other beauty." Unquote. However, as Jesus, in the words of Torrance, is the visibility of the Godhead, the depths of beauty that lie concealed in the Godhead are revealed to us through him in his incarnation, death, resurrection, and ascension. Quote, "The Son is the focus not only of truth, but also of beauty in God. He is the Father's art. The Father has given expression to his own being in the Son. Jesus is indeed beautiful, both as the perfect resemblance of the Father and in relation to all the created beauty that's in his image. The world possesses its full goodness and beauty only in the Son." Unquote. Clark Pinnock builds on this in his book The Flame of Love and observes that, quote, "Hindrances to faith in God seldom have to do with a lack of proofs. Hindrances to faith have more to do with the quality of our theism. Theology, has to do not with whether God is, but with who God is. Theology gains credibility when we have a doctrine of God that one can fall in love with, unquote. For this reason, as we'll see below, the restoration of beauty is an essential plank of Christian apologetics. Balthasar also believes that beauty is the most neglected of the three classical transcendentals, the others being goodness and truth. And beauty needs to be recovered if the gospel is going to effectively penetrate a postmodern culture. Our cities, our politics, our relationships, and even our church buildings and theology are often ugly, while our message is one that should radiate the glory of the Lord. In addition, the recovery of beauty is essential in the recovery of worship. Augustine laments his wasted opportunities with the words, "Too late did I love thee, O fairness, so ancient yet so new." And then adds, "When I love God, I love the beauty of bodies, the rhythm of movement, the shining of eyes, the embrace of friends, the feelings, the scents, and the sounds of creation. I want to embrace it all, for I love you with all my senses in this cosmos of your love. In all things that encounter me, you are waiting for me." Unquote. Theologically, it's as if the beautiful is the doorway into the welcoming presence of God. Elaine Scarry, who's not an evangelical, says that, quote, "Dante and many others repeatedly describe beauty as a greeting. At the moment one comes into the presence of something beautiful, it greets you. In its etymology, the word welcome means that one enters with the well-wishes or consent of the person or thing already standing on that ground. It's as though the welcoming thing has entered into and consented to your being in its midst." Unquote. Irenaeus described the Son and the Spirit as the two arms of the Father and said that by them he wants to draw men into his embrace, and it's the beauty of the Son revealed by the Spirit that draws and welcomes us into this intimacy with the Father. In this segment on the Trinity and beauty, five areas will be briefly highlighted. The sixth draws on the work of Elaine Scarry, and as it's on the relationship between beauty and justice, and as justice is such a crucial issue in the 21st century, it's much longer than the first five and will be dealt with in the next edition of Footnotes. First, beauty evokes a response ahead of our intellectual barriers and is therefore an immediate and self-authenticating apologetic. Our task is to set forth the gospel and our theology in such a way that it impacts somebody like a great painting by one of the masters or a symphony by Mozart. It hits us without any cognitive mediation. When we do explore it intellectually, its greatness seems inexhaustible. This is true of great art and music, and even more so, of course, of the gospel. Elaine Scarry remarks that, quote, "Beauty causes us to gape and suspend all thought," unquote. It has the capacity to slip past our cognitive defenses and pierce the heart. Sam Kamalason, a Christian leader in India, was approached by a Brahmin who had been exposed to the gospel and asked Sam, "How do I get this beautiful vision?" What had captured him was a glimpse of the beauty of Jesus that he couldn't yet grasp cognitively, but which had already pierced his heart. And this is, of course, how the four Gospels themselves operate. They don't set out to prove anything, but to simply set forth the beauty of the Word made flesh. And if we do the same by allowing the Holy Spirit to live in and flow through us, people will be captivated by the loveliness of Jesus before their argumentative intellect kicks in and their hermeneutic of suspicion is aroused. Beauty evokes a response ahead of our intellectual barriers. However, like great art or music, once people are impacted by this beauty, then we have an opportunity to explain it. And because their hearts are now open, our apologetics now unpack what they've already seen and heard. An illustration, perhaps, would be listening to an aria from an opera sung in Italian. We don't know the language, the plot, or the characters, but the beauty of the aria impacts us. When it's translated and explained, our appreciation of what we've already seen and heard only increases. As Elaine Scarry says, something beautiful fills the mind, yet invites the search for something beyond itself. Balthazar continues the thought by remarking that, quote, something is beautiful only because the truth and goodness of the depths of reality itself are manifested through it. The humanity of Jesus gives out a radiance of beauty that is intended to draw men to its source. The beauty contained in the form of revelation is itself compelling and needs no justification but itself. Unquote. Unfortunately, in our evangelism, we tended to major on logical arguments, and while we should by no means neglect these, the transfiguring beauty of Christ, clothed in his gospel, needs to be recovered as a self-authenticating apologetic. Second, beauty acts as the guardian of the other two transcendentals, truth and goodness. Balthazar has a lot to say about truth and goodness, but believes that beauty has become the Cinderella of the trio. Quote, owing to the interconnection of the three transcendentals, the true, the good, and the beautiful, neglecting the third member of this trio can only be gravely damaging to the flourishing of the other two. Yet precisely this is what has transpired. Unquote. This means that the good must be guarded by the beautiful. Otherwise, it will be distorted and simply become utilitarian. Without doubt, both Stalin and Hitler believed that their policies were for the ultimate good of their people. The tragedy is that they both rejected and were blind to the true and the beautiful, which would have told them otherwise. In addition, the true has also been uncoupled from the good and the beautiful, and reduced to what somebody called the flatlands of naturalism. The good and the beautiful should guard the true and shape our epistemology, and it's to the detriment of our culture that they have now been eclipsed by rationalism, which is now no longer clothed in beauty and goodness, but stands alone, sterile and naked. After a lifetime of reflection, the philosopher Polanyi believed that it was this detachment of truth from goodness and beauty that gave rise to the two world wars of the 20th century. Beauty is not sentimental. It guards the value of human life. Balthazar's belief was that, quote, beauty, by its very nature, always elicits a response. One simply cannot experience something as beautiful without responding, without assenting. we may doubt, and often do, the inherent goodness and truth of the being of the world, but we cannot do so with beauty. Beauty brings with it a self-evidence that enlightens without mediation. Only the perception of the beautiful is so direct as to banish all doubt. The truth and goodness of the depths of reality are manifested in beauty." Unquote. If the cross is the highest expression of sacrificial love, it's also the highest expression of beauty. And this is why in the Gospel of John, the beauty of Jesus as the only begotten of the Father is set forth in his suffering and death. The cross meant that the hour had come for the Son of Man to be glorified. And for John, the glory of Christ, his beauty, was most vividly seen when he embraced the ugliness of our sin in self-giving love on the cross. Balthasar adds that, quote, "We sometimes note that a great work of art has the power to touch the lives of those who come in contact with it. And such power is ascribed to Christ, not only in his resurrection, but also in his cross." He goes on to add, "Only beautiful theology has a chance of making any impact in human history. And it's the beauty of suffering love which above all strikes and overwhelms the observer. Beauty is the disclosure of the depths of being, and beauty as absolute self-giving love is manifested most vividly in the cross." Unquote. My apologies again for all the quotes. I was tempted to abandon them and express his thoughts in my own words, but I really could not do him justice. Bear with me, just two more points, and I'm done. Fourth, beauty, according to Balthasar, points to the reality that stands behind it. God's glory is reflected in the beauty of the created world. As the psalmist says, the heavens are declaring the glory of God. The beauty of a butterfly, a baby, a flower, a sunset, or an Everest are all theophanies that manifest the beauty of the creator of creation. Elaine Scarry writes that, quote, "Someone or something remains silently present in the beautiful, and even conveys a sense of the newness or the newbornness of the entire world." Unquote. Beauty then becomes a signpost pointing away from itself towards a deeper reality. Balthasar adds that, quote, "Beauty is now regarded in our society as a totally subjective quality, if it exists at all. However, the gracious loveliness which exists in creation and escapes exact scientific characterization still remains internal to the experience of art, even in a disenchanted world. It remains the hook with which the angel draws the heart towards heaven." Unquote. Elaine Scarry adds that, quote, "Beautiful things carry greetings from other worlds within them." Unquote. Beauty, therefore, has a destination beyond itself. The lie that the universe is simply the shrapnel from the Big Bang is undermined by the intrinsic beauty to be found throughout the whole cosmos. Despite the fact that naturalism rules the day, Balthasar and others would urge us not to draw back in advocating that beauty does indeed have a destination beyond itself, and to start informing our culture of where that destination lies is our calling from God. Fifth, the negation of beauty, the ugly and the evil, point to the need for the cross. In addition to beauty, we're also vividly aware that depravity and defilement also abound on planet Earth. However, such aberrations are not intrinsic to the original creation, which was good and beautiful in every respect. The Lutheran theologian Jacob Heymann presents the world as God's poem, a thing to be made eloquent. Quote, creation shimmers and gleams with the divine Shekinah, and man, in the image of God, is a poem. Only if the fragments are reassembled and given a destiny can man and nature be healed. The embodiment of the divine word in human flesh reconstitutes man and the cosmos and is the fulfillment of God's poetry in creating. Unquote. Augustine saw beauty as life-saving and described it as a plank amid the waves of the sea. Elaine Scarry observes that beauty quickens, it adrenalizes, it makes the heart beat faster, it makes life more vivid, animated, and worth living. And perhaps this is why the demonic always seeks to deface and debase the beautiful, simply because it is so life-affirming. Balthazar sums up by saying, quote, but what of the Trinitarian Son made man? Is he, even in his passion, to be called beautiful? Christ's veiling of his beauty was inspired by a desire to make the ugly beautiful by his love. The Church, moved by the deformity of the crucified, confesses her guilt and becomes beautiful. Christ is the ugly root from which the beautiful tree of the Church arises. He continues, all beauty belongs to Christ, in whom all truth is grounded. More particularly, it's related to his eternal sacrifice, that total self-giving love from which the creation of the world proceeds. Unquote. God empties himself by lavishing his love on the creation before he empties himself by lavishing his love in incarnation. And as he's the lamb slain before the creation of the world, then the creation itself must be generated out of this same self-giving love. And the only way, therefore, for humankind to live appropriately in such a cosmos is by reciprocating and pouring ourselves out in sacrificial love towards God and neighbor. Beauty is not cosmetic. Its deepest manifestation is that of self-giving love. In conclusion, it only remains to be said that while our culture has rejected the possibility of objective beauty, we dare not do so as the Church. Beauty remains a self-authenticating apologetic. It enables us to fly in under the radar and penetrate the heart before the intellectual barriers come up. Balthazar and others have done us a great service in pointing this out. In the next edition of Footnotes, I'll take this further and explore the important connection between beauty and justice. In closing, I should add that if Balthazar and driving the car to work are totally incompatible, let me know and I'll send you a written transcript. His great bedtime reading. He has me asleep in no time.